if you think about perfectionism, there's no way that you can get past the concept of comparing yourself to someone else, as well as talking about the definition of perfection, because in some ways it's in the eye of the beholder. So if we think about perfectionism, to your point, what we're striving is to do a really good job. And because perfectionism is based on comparison, we're trying to do the best job in comparison to other people.
And now from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winodo.
Welcome back to part two of our series with Dr. Monica Roots, a trailblazer in mental health technology during Mental Health Awareness Month. As a co-founder and president of Bend Health, Dr. Roots devotes her career to revolutionizing mental health outcomes through innovative practices and solutions. With her deep expertise in psychiatry, especially in child and adolescent care, she persistently pushes the boundaries of what's achievable in mental health services. Today, we shift our focus to a topic that resonates with many, the pursuit of perfection. Dr. Roots will examine how this pursuit affects not only entrepreneurs, but also the broader community. Her insights will illuminate the pressures of perfectionism, particularly in the digital age, where comparisons are rampant and often unrealistic. Dr. Roots argues that while striving for excellence is crucial, recognizing the learning opportunities that arise from mistakes is equally important. She champions viewing challenges as catalysts for growth, a perspective that enhances both personal and professional development. In this episode, Dr. Roots will explore the intricacies of perfectionism, offering strategies to balance high standards with mental well-being. She will discuss the fine line between striving for excellence and the pitfalls of comparing ourselves to often unattainable ideals. Join us as we continue this compelling conversation filled with actionable insights and thoughtful reflection on embracing imperfection while still aiming for the best. Well, Monica, thanks for joining us. Welcome back, actually.
Thank you for having me.
And yeah, it's really exciting to have you back here today. On our previous conversation, we talked a little bit about your journey as an entrepreneur and the work that you're doing. And coming up from that conversation, we talked a bit about some of the challenges we as a person face oftentimes, and also as an entrepreneur, somebody who's really driving or striving for doing a good thing, and oftentimes be faced with this attribute, I want to say, that could be good, could be bad, and depending on how you look at it, is perfection. And so that's the topic that we want to cover today.
Yeah, I think it's such an important topic, both for founders, but honestly, the general public. I think that it's something that we are all wrestling with, especially in this age of digital media and instantaneous delivery of information about your life. It's quite an intersection.
And I think at the same time, let's think about even the word perfectionist sounds so bad because it seems it doesn't give room for an improvement. But at the same time, we want to do a good job as best as you could. And when they say as best as you could, in a way, it's kind of perfect at that moment.
Yeah, exactly. If you think about perfectionism, there's no way that you can get past the concept of comparing yourself to someone else, as well as talking about the definition of perfection, because in some ways it's in the eye of the beholder. So if we think about perfectionism, to your point, what we're striving is to do a really good job. And because perfectionism is based on comparison, we're trying to do the best job in comparison to other people. If you think about trying to start a business, in some ways that is very central to the mindset. You are trying to do something disruptive. The best form of disruption and the best company that you can make is I'm trying to make a perfect company that's addressing the problem that I found, and I'm going to do it as well as I possibly can. Let's face it, that's what the investors are looking for, and that's what our customers are looking for. That's why they pick you. But I think that there's also room for being a human being, which means that the best opportunities for learning are actually the mistakes. Think about it, right? If you had an A plus on every test, you wouldn't know where your weaknesses are. But if you are able to think about what those mistakes are, you can learn from them. But given many people's drive towards perfectionism, unfortunately, we're losing out on some of these learning opportunities.
Why is that the case, though? Because you can try your best, and that best is at that moment. And of course, it's not, there's always room to improve if you just understand that and open to the idea that this is the best at this moment. The deadline is at 1 p.m. This is the best you get. And at 2 p.m., you can come up with the new ideas to improve that.
I actually like where you went with this, which is it's the best that I can. It doesn't mean it's perfect. So that I think is a really important differentiation, because best that I can reflects being a human being. So if we think about it, a lot has changed in the area of digital technology and social media. Online, really a lot of what you see is perfection. You can see it everywhere. You can see it from the ads for new companies. You can see it on TikTok and people putting on makeup and trying to look as perfect as possible. You see it on Facebook when you see your friends and their family and that picture looks pretty perfect on vacation. But the funny thing is, behind the scenes, we know what probably went into that. Probably it was about 20 different pictures of your kids fighting with each other before you got that first perfect one. It probably was a website or an ad that you went through multiple iterations before you put that one online. That person who's on TikTok who is exhibiting a new form of makeup probably has a filter on. We know this logically, but our brain has trouble always recognizing that dissonance, meaning that when you see perfection, you cannot help, unfortunately, because of how our mind works, to start your reaction with comparison.
And so how do we trick our mind so that we become healthier in that way?
Yeah, I think that there's so much to that, right? As we look at what recently came out in 2021, for example, it was a survey that was released by the CDC that was called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. In that survey, what they found was that our kids are suffering. And our kids are unique, if you think about it. They grew up in this area of social media. I did not grow up with a cell phone in my hand, but our younger generation did. So if you look at teens today, for example, they're not doing well. 44% of teens have persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness, and people are feeling lonelier every day. In fact, the Surgeon General has said that loneliness is equivalent to smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. It leads to some significant medical consequences because you are not interacting with others. So as we think about loneliness and perfectionism, which once again is a comparison to others that makes you feel kind of lonely at the end of the day, because really it's you competing against the world. We really need to think about how we become more literate or smarter so that we can really tailor our reactions. The funny thing, as I was saying that out loud, is these are really the tenets of something called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is something that we do in mental health all the time, which means you have automatic thoughts. Those are based on your experiences or what we call cognitive errors. And your entire job is to sit there and think about how does the evidence really confirm or refute the thought? And then you change that thought so that your mood changes. This is something really hard to do. That's why people are in therapy for years trying to learn how to do this. And it's a practice, if you think about it. But we don't teach it to many people until they really have a need, like they're depressed or they're anxious and they finally see a therapist. But truly, it's something foundational to probably how we need to view the world, starting with young kids and teaching it in schools, teaching our parents so they can teach their kids, as well as honestly giving room and grace to each other to say, you don't need to be perfect. That might be your thought. Here's the evidence against that. I want you to make a mistake because without a mistake, you can't learn. And doing your best is good enough.
But what is the best? What is the best, right? I think everybody's different. As a manager or as when you run a company, you have a certain standard that before this is the criteria that before I put it out there, it needs to reach certain threshold.
I actually talk to my kids about this all the time. I think I talked about this at least 5 times this week, that your best is trying with the information that you have and effort. I say this a lot. Just being smart without the effort means nothing. And that is actually the same when you're running a company, which means that you can set all the best policies out there and a person may be trying their best, but without true effort and collaboration, you actually don't get their best. So let me give you a scenario. Let's say that you're running a company and you have something that you wrote up on how to talk to a customer when they first call. You've got the perfect scripts out there. They're fantastic. You think they're amazing. But one thing that you forgot to do was actually train your staff on how to use it. Or when should you use it? And how do you give them feedback to get better? And how do you know that they're doing their best if you didn't train them? Perfect example of we have perfection with the protocol and the procedure, but we don't have that leader's best in actually training and supporting their team to be able to do their best. That's the difference between perfection and effort, right? Being able to do your best. I think that that is something we can apply to every aspect of business and truly as being a leader, which is having the best idea is one piece of it, but not putting the effort into implementation and supporting their team does not mean that you get your best.
I like what you're saying, that there is a tool that you have, I mean, a framework. You have the best idea. You can do all the protocol that support that best idea. But you need to provide the training and also the feedback part.
Yes, I really like to come from a place of continuous learning based on data and effort, really work ethic. So what do I mean by that? What I mean is I believe in an environment where 2 truths need to be there. One is to come from a place of wanting to learn. That effort of wanting to learn is really important. And to your point, being okay that I'm not perfect and I actually want to learn. The second tenet that I always bring to many of my employees and truly to myself is raise your hand before it becomes a problem. Meaning that if you foresee yourself not really understanding a concept or the process is not working or you're confused about something, my rule is raise your hand first before you continue to try to navigate that problem. And maybe it doesn't work, but someone else on your team could have helped you. That takes some courage because it means raising your hand and saying, I'm not perfect. I don't know everything. I need help. But that is how teams learn to work as teams and not just sole contributors.
It's really interesting. I just had this conversation this morning with my son. The same thing is that it's good to ask the question to your team member so that they know that you don't understand or you need help. And it's such a hard thing for anybody, I think, is because I feel like when you ask somebody, you're kind of taking time from them, you burden them, and in a way, you feel like this is my job to do this part. And how do you overcome that?
There's 2 pieces to that. First of all is, you're right, you shouldn't ask the same question over and over again, right? Because that means that you're not learning and there should be an effort to learn on your own. However, applying knowledge to new situations can be very difficult. So let's take to your point, being a parent, one of the hardest jobs out there. I think a simple example of this is sleep training. We've all been through it, right? We've all had babies. They didn't sleep very well. And you maybe tried one technique of helping your kid sleep on their own with one kid. Trust me, that application is one concept to one kid. If you try to apply the same concept the same way to your second kid, chances are it won't work. Because being a parent and applying knowledge to two different situations, which are two different kids, requires a different lens and experience. So there's a lot of parents that actually come to Bend Health frequently and say, I have tried everything. I have tried limits. I have tried to get my kid to follow directions. I don't know what to do. And frequently what is actually happening is they're applying the same knowledge and the same method of teaching that they did to their first kid, to their second kid, without taking into account their learning style, their unique characteristics, and their own personality. This is also those points where we as a parent may have said, and it's not good to say, so I'm going to put this out there, I wish you could do this like your brother or sister. This is one of the worst things that you can say to a kid, because once again, remember that they are unique and cannot be compared to another individual. This is the start of setting up a child for concerns about perfectionism and that comparison. So if you think about that in business, it's very much the same. Let's go back to that operations or customer service call. You may have a perfect protocol for a customer who is calling in to schedule something, and they're in a great mood. Everything works, everything is great, and you know that customer hangs up and you know they're happy. But what about the customer that calls in and is frustrated? Maybe they're having a bad day and you're trying to apply the same procedure to them when they maybe are pressed for time, they're irritated, they're not finding what they need. That customer service representative is not going to be able to apply that same knowledge to that situation. They need training on how to help this person in a very unique way. So without raising your hand and getting knowledge from others on your team on their experience and what worked for them or didn't work for them, we don't allow ourselves the opportunity to learn from others. And so once again, that opportunity of raising your hand and say, I think I tried my best, I need help on this, is an opportunity to learn and also potentially teach others.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
I like that. Flipping it, that's not only that you learn from others, but you also have something on the table to offer for other people to learn. As a leader, especially if you're a leader of a startup, so busy, money is tight, resources tight, time is tight, you want to do the best, you want everybody to do the best, and you have the protocol, put together the best protocol, but how do you make everybody move towards the same direction that you want them to move to and achieve that goal?
I think taking the stance of ownership is really important in departments, in that if you as a leader and a startup take ownership for every part of your company, it will fail. So it's really important within each department to find a leader that feels like they own that department and they're swimming in the same direction. I think that mindset of ownership is really important, especially in a startup. And if you think about it, it's all new, it's all fresh, and it can all be changed. So that, I think, is a really important dynamic to hold within a company, because the unfortunate part is if it's not there, the startup leader takes that entire burden on, which means that they're then turning to their teammates and trying to push them along instead of pull them along, you know, and walking alongside of them. They become the only person who is accountable to the mistakes. See how that starts to become a house of cards that will crumble. But if you have each department really holding ownership, But once again, having the environment of being able to say, I don't know how to apply my knowledge to this situation, I need help, allows the entire company to feel that ability of learning together and moving together.
It's almost that, how do you create that safe environment as well for everybody to be able to be comfortable?
It's tough, especially given most companies are virtual now. If you think about it, before when we were in person, you could walk down the hallway, you probably had coffee with these people, you have a very strong relationship. But for those who are working virtually only, many of us have never met in person. We don't have that pre-existing relationship or those elements in between that foster a relationship with teammates. So one thing is understanding that that feeling or that dynamic will not be there without effort. A leader needs to make effort to get to know their team members, to have those coffee breaks, to be able to have conversations with them, to build a relationship of trust. The second piece, I think, for a startup leader is there's ownership within those departments, and you need to have a strong leader there who knows how to be a manager and move those things forward, but also a startup leader who's willing to dig in alongside. I think that is a really important visual. And in my head, I frequently think about the following. I envision someone planting a garden, right? And they're planting beautiful tulips or roses. And let's say those are a couple of team members outside of your building or your company trying to make it beautiful. I envision the concept of me getting down on my hands and knees and doing that planting with them if they need me. That sort of visual I constantly have in my head, because if I'm not willing to do their job, that's not okay. If I don't know how to do their job, that's not okay. That's how we as startup owners need to think, which is we know all aspects. We know that we as startup leaders probably can do it perfectly, right? But we need other people to be able to do that work, but be willing to get down on your hands and knees and get dirty with your teammates and foster that community that you're in this together, I think really helps people swim in the same direction.
And I think at the same time, they cannot do everything. Everybody has their job to do. As a leader, you should be willing to roll up your sleeve and help to make things happen? And how do you also make sure that you have the commitment from the team that they're willing to put in all out of their effort to move the ship forward or the direction that you want to be?
You're right. I frequently say, can I clone myself, right? Because I wish that I could do it all. You're absolutely right. But I think it's the key moments. It's the key moments when there's a little bit of stress, you're willing to zone in and you're willing to zoom in, but then once again, take a step back and review with your team leaders what was going on, what could we have done better, what worked really, really well. You always want to celebrate the wins and how do we continue to move forward. So I think being a leader is understanding the right moments and also understanding that you don't know everything. I think sometimes we struggle with that, right? Which is, when you first start a company and it's, let's say, two or three people, you know every aspect of that business, every single move, every single contract, every single call. But as you grow, you know, at this point, Vent Health has grown a lot. I don't know every phone call. I don't know every visit that happened. And I have to be okay with that. Sometimes we have to let go a little bit, which is really hard for a startup leader. But once again, bringing it back to parenting, I think it's really similar. When you have a child, you know every activity, you know their schedule, you know what they ate. That's pretty common in preschool, right? You are worried, did they have their snack on time? But then when they go to elementary school, you no longer get those notifications from school. You now need to let go a little bit more. And then you get into the teenage years where you really need to take a step back. Because if you try to micromanage that teenager, they will push back. Because they feel like you don't trust them. They need to learn from their peers. That's a crucial time. And then young adult is even more. That's the moment that I tell parents, you are now in the stands at the football game. Don't try to act like you're the coach. Get off the field. You are now in the stands. Don't interfere. You will cheer when they do a good job. You will support them when they're having their downtimes. But That is now your job. I think about that very similar in running a company. Different stages takes different support levels.
Mm-hmm. I feel that I definitely look at my work role differently once I become a parent. And then you just realize that it's kind of, you can learn a lot from the parenting. And I think parenting is a safe space for you to experiment in a way, even though the stake is higher.
The stakes are higher, but I think it's actually really similar. So we as parents sometimes think of ourselves as what our kids look as us at, which is when they're very young and they look at their parents, they think of them as superheroes. They're infallible. Everything they do is perfect. I'm learning from them. The most powerful thing you can do for a child or a teen is admit when you don't know something, when you made a mistake. That is the most powerful thing you can do for your child. It's simple. But it's things like, and I think we've all been there, mommy was running late. She was a little frustrated. I'm sorry if I raised my voice. That was my fault. That's on me. I think that that is a really important moment. Or I forgot that. So sorry, right? That is my fault. Because I think in those moments, you're showing your child you are not that superhero. You are not perfect. And that is okay. And in those moments, you are giving your child grace and room to learn. We all as parents can give our child that gift today. I encourage us all go home today and apologize for something because I'm sure we've all made a mistake in the last week. Go do that because it is a gift you're giving your child to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's also when you're willing to own your mistake or your flaw, or you give the permission that it's okay to also admit your mistake too. So somehow, maybe if the parents never make a mistake, then the kid feel like I should never make a mistake because I'm trying to match what my parents are, I think.
Exactly. Because especially for those who run a company, your kids are going to compare themselves to you. And they actually maybe have one of the hardest jobs where they're looking at you as a company owner. You are being disruptive. You are really motivated. You probably work late nights, right? They're looking at you as this person who is extremely successful. That is right. A very high bar that you're unintentionally setting for your kid. It's not that you mean to. That's your work, right? But that's what they see.
Right.
And so I think having that conversation around, you know what? I make mistakes sometimes. You know, my kids say, oh, you're doing a podcast, because I'll tell them what I'm doing because I think it's important for them to know. And they'll say, do you ever make a mistake? I'm like, yeah, for sure. Do you ever get anxious? Absolutely. They're like, you don't look like it. I was like, oh, but I do. That humanness is really important. So if I can do anything, it would be getting rid of the concept of perfection. Mm-hmm. Because it's not real, right? These filters are not real. That picture you put on Facebook is not real. I want to see the mess. Right. I want us all to share the mess because that's what's real and that's what makes us human.
I think that is also, I almost feel that that's a privilege for some who see the mess, right? Because you cannot put the mess out in the public, right? In order for you to see the mess, you have to be part of the team. You have to be invited to see the flaw, right? Just even before the whole social media, right? When you put out an advertisement, I remember my first job out when I was in college, I worked for Kraft Foods. My product was a Philadelphia cream cheese, but my friend was in the Breyers team, and then they work with the marketing team to shoot the commercial, and they use a different formulation for the ice cream so that when you scoop them, it's a perfect scoop. And then they have all this different trick to make everything look shinier. They brush some oil on the food. When you watch it on TV, it looks amazing. There's a stretchiness of the pizza. Everything was just perfect. But that's what I'm saying. Sometimes I feel that that's only for the privileged who got to see the mess.
I think that's true, right? We still have to, once again, when I run an ad for Bend Health, it better look pretty good, right? So I'm not saying that. I think that it's more around the human to human. I think that's really the piece, right? And to your point, it may be a privileged few, and that's fine. It may be more than a few. That's great. But I also think we need to be very careful to not be lonely. And that's very different than being alone. Being alone is fine, right? You can be lonely in a crowded room. Really being able to not be lonely means you're making a connection with a privileged few or many. And so one of those things that I think is really important, right, is once again, really making sure that we are making those connections at work, because we spend a lot of time there, at home. And loneliness, unfortunately, has become almost like a scarlet letter. People think of it as, I don't want to tell someone that I'm lonely because it means that maybe I'm not good enough or I'm not friendly enough or people don't want to hang out with me. We frequently put ourselves in that lonely bucket because we don't want to reach out and acknowledge, I'm lonely, I need something, I'm not perfect. So I think even just an incremental moment that everybody could just have today of reaching out to one person by text or phone and just tell them about your day, what went well, what didn't go well, the roses and the thorns, right? And the bud. I think that that, once again, is the step to you as a human being, feeling like you can do your best, but not perfect. Helping others have that permission as well, I think is really important because that gives us the space to then really focus our efforts, especially when we're running a company, on what do you need to do that's your best? How can we work together? I think the more we foster that as a community and it spreads everywhere, the better that we'll do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had this conversation with a friend. She mentioned about loneliness in colleges. And everybody's putting on their headphones now and they don't really interact with each other, new friends, as much as when we were in college. And I was thinking about how it's always hard for anybody, no matter how outgoing you are, to talk, to reach out to somebody that you don't know. It's always take courage and risk. And in the old days, maybe the feeling of I'm not talking to anybody, I feel more awkward than talking to people. So that's why I'm going to talk to people. And now everybody can pretend, they can look at their phone, listen to the music. I don't talk to people. I don't look awkward. So then they practice less as a result of that.
Yeah. I think that we're doing that, right? We're practicing isolation every single day. And we do this in our homes. Our kids are seeing us do this. And bet we're doing this at work. We're doing this every day. We are actually practicing isolation. So the converse is true. It's going to take some effort to reverse that. But I think that the important thing to understand is without reversing that, we will get more lonely, more depressed, more anxious. These things are all related. Mm-hmm. So if we want to reverse that trend, we are going to, as a whole in a society, need to start to make that momentum forward. You and me, Christine, we didn't know each other recently, but now look at us having these great conversations. And if I was walking down the street, I would definitely stop you and say hello. That's a connection. That's a connection. It's a new connection. It's exciting and it's awesome. And we need to share with each other. Having a new connection is fun. Remember that?
Yeah.
Practice it. But once again, I think it starts with just that eye contact and hello. Even if they're wearing their headphones, they can still see you.
Right, right. Until they have that Apple Vision goggles. They still can see you, actually, I was told. But going back to the whole idea about perfection, I think maybe the word perfection is overused and maybe I also have a bad rap for a lot of good reason. It's more like your best effort. But how do you set your standard? I often compare myself with others, right? Because I learn from others. I say, oh, this is how it looks. It looks great on this level. So I learn from that person's or whatever the work of the others that I think is a good work. So I put that is at least I want to achieve that standard. It's hard to create your own standard without in silo, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
I do totally believe in learning from other people. One really important practice I started this year was journaling, and it allowed me to reflect. It allowed me to reflect on a couple of things. One, what are my goals for this year? Because I do believe in aggregate, you want to improve by about 1% per week. I'm not going to say per day because we've all had bad days. We need to give ourselves grace. But I think that moments of reflection, unless we stop, journal, think, or even meditate on how we're doing, we're not always aware, right? Because in this day and age with so many things to distract us, it's very easy to not have any introspection. So I think as a first step, start a practice of checking in with yourself. And that could be a body scan for 5 minutes. That could be a journaling exercise. That could be a mindfulness exercise. And that could be, what did you do well today? What do you wish you had done better? So those things that you wanted to do better, what is 1% better of what you did? And that could be your benchmark for the next week, because that's going to be your best. And if you supersede it, great, fantastic. But you set that bar of what 1% better looks like, and you know you can get there. And be concrete about it. It could mean something like having one more conversation that day. It could mean having one more hour of sleep. It could mean having one more salad a week, right? That could be your benchmark, but be really specific about it. We do this a lot in therapy. They're called SMART goals. They're simple, measurable therapy goals that you're trying to reach. We can do that as well to constantly set the bar for ourselves of what's our best this week, because I truly believe that we in aggregate improve, but we need to set specific goals of improvement to reach our best and slowly continue to push that boundary.
I feel like if I have to do that list, I would have plenty of lists that I need to do better.
Pick one thing, or else it's too overwhelming. And then we end up doing nothing. And then it's just a sort of state of inertia, right?
Right. And then how do you keep it consistent?
It's a practice once again. So I think for me, it's journaling. For other people, it might be listening to a song, a specific song every week. And that's their time to really be introspective. But in therapy, we only work on one or two goals at a time. That is very specific as to why we do that. Because if we give ourselves 10 goals, you cannot reach 10 goals in one time. You cannot actually hold that space in your mind to reach 10 different goals. So pick one or two.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for that tool and tips. And I'm going to try to work on that and appreciate you sharing your insight and advice.
Let me know how it goes.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.